The Other Hand is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hello, welcome to the latest episode of The Other Hand. We're doing something a little bit different again today. We've invited another guest to join us. The guest today is David Higgins. David, I've known for quite a while. He is an economist and has very, very strong views on politics and is pretty politically active, I know, in this country. So welcome, David. And I guess I should say that you're about to launch your own podcast with somebody I know as well, as does Chris, Dale McDermott, called Next Round. So very best of luck with that. And
thanks, guys. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about it. I just want to, I guess I want to start off, David, with a couple of things that struck me. You, I don't know what the word is, X'd today, banned TikTok.
Oh, yeah. I put that straight out on Twitter. People say it's formerly known as Twitter. I say it's forever known as Twitter. But yeah, I mean, look, TikTok is a platform which is owned by the Chinese government. And that alone should be reason for its divestment, if regulators in the US can somehow achieve that. But what I also mean by banning TikTok in the context of the RTE primetime expose that was done yesterday is that teenagers at least should be banned. It was just a two-word tweet, but you know that's the long form.
David, what's worse, being owned by the Chinese government or Elon Musk?
I would say the Chinese government. Musk, and that's not to say that Musk doesn't come with damage. The biggest damage is that he looks like he might be asking us to pay to tweet, which may well tank the whole platform in time. But that's a hell of a lot better than having your tweets sucked up and potentially sent to an authoritarian country. I mean, I was pretty shocked in recent years when TikTok acknowledged that they do have data transfers to China, and that's why U.S. Politicians are now looking to just cut that link in entirely and give it new owners.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering where that came from, David, because I actually didn't see the primetime program last night. I was otherwise engaged watching PSG in Barcelona.
All right, yeah, you probably had more fun watching that.
Much more fun than prime time, absolutely. So, David, in the next 12 months here in this country, we're going to have three significant elections. At the beginning of June, we have the local and European elections. And by the end of March next year, we have to have a general election.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The opinion polls here are all over the place. You know, in the last couple of years, really, we've seen Sinn Féin plateau and gradually lose a little bit of ground. And certainly the momentum that was built up in 2020 has been lost to some extent. And the two main parties of government, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, are really struggling and not making very much progress. So I guess what I'd like to start off and ask you about the recent changes in Fine Gael with the election of Simon Harris. What do you think it all means?
Yeah, well, the election of Harris was welcomed within Fine Gael, but I would say cautiously. And I say cautiously because Leo Varadkar's time as leader was, you know, new young leader comes in, excitement about maybe rising in the polls, but that just didn't transpire at the 2020 election for sure, which was his first outing as leader. And I'm doubtful as to whether Harris, come the next general, can also revive Fine Gael's fortunes. What I think the outlook for politics is in Ireland is that we're going Dutch. And what I mean by that is that the days of any one political party getting more than 30% more than 40% in the polls are just gone. And we're going to have the three main parties hovering around the early 20s with a lot of independents, a lot of smaller parties. You might see the likes of Soc Dems are aimed to breach the 5% threshold and pick up some seats elsewhere. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we end up with a change in government. That actually might mean that the mix of Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, independents, maybe aimed to maybe smaller parties, even the what's left of Labour, could roll into a very large coalition. But we're certainly looking at a very long government formation period when that comes around next time. If you look at a country like the Netherlands, which is a party system that had such a rainbow, such a large mix of political parties, they're now at least, I think, maybe 6 months trying to form a government. Geert Wilders of the PVV party had the largest number of seats. People said that he won the election. But in these countries, you don't win elections. You're the largest party, and it's a very different thing. You know, the days of overall majorities are gone, and it takes months for these things to form with maybe three, four or more groupings.
One of the things that we spoke about on a podcast a little while ago now was precisely that point, David, which I think I called the podcast or asked a question in its title is Ireland in for a long period of no government following the general election? And we somewhat mischievously said that if that happened, that might actually be quite a good thing, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument to say that politicians should actually just leave things alone and don't touch things and don't change things. You know, I'm thinking of the call by people in the rental sector recently that a change of government, if it comes around, would actually lead to more change in the rental sector, which gives uncertainty to people in that sector and has only drove some landlords away. On the government formation, I think you're definitely going to see Taoiseach Simon Harris go over to Washington in March next year and give the bowl a shamrock. We actually just don't know who he's giving it to. I'd say it's Biden, not Trump, but it might be Trump. And then thereafter, we may well spend months of passing around between the different parties trying to get things to form. If Sinn Féin are going to be involved in government formation talks, that's going to take a long while to actually get an agreement between it and the other parties. And then these things will have to be put to the members of either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. That too will take a hell of a long time to get going and could even force leadership change in some of the parties. If Micheál Martin, let's say, does come along and tries to do that, he might, you know, these things could lead to unpredictable things where whole political parties could change in their outlook to Sinn Féin after the election.
One of the things that's happening here in the UK is that we have an idea-free pre-election period. The two big ideas of the incumbent party are to stop small boats crossing the channel and to ban smoking. After that, there's nothing. And when you look to the opposition, the Labour Party, by all accounts, going to win the election by a landslide. That is a complete idea-free zone, and all the smaller parties are completely invisible. I was wondering, in the Irish context, I know Sinn Féin are relying exactly on what the Labour Party here are relying on, which is that everybody's just fed up with the incumbent government, both for what they've done and what they haven't done. And the issues are very, very similar. And I think a lot of Irish people forget that housing and health crises are a global phenomena, not just something that's present in Ireland. And I'm interested that you said that you think that Biden might win. I think we're now, you and I are in a minority of two. I think that it's nice to find somebody else. And one of the reasons for that is that I think Donald Trump has lost the capacity to surprise. I think that Donald Trump is now such a known quantity that his novelty has worn off. Everybody knows what he's going to say. Everybody knows what he's going to do. And yeah, it's just Donald Trump being Donald Trump. And a certain amount of electoral fatigue might, I think, set in for him. The second reason why I think Donald Trump could be in trouble is because of the abortion issue, and that's a particular policy issue. But the third reason is the geopolitical issue, which I think is going to affect all elections over the next, well, for the foreseeable future. The geopolitical situation is so bad, so awful. I heard a radio, BBC radio presenter, not some flaky guest, a serious presenter, expressed to some panelists this morning on the radio show his observation that the world is already entered World War III. And the way in which he did it was extraordinary. It was as if he was announcing the weather forecast. It was nothing that was surprising, unusual, or extraordinary. And we live in very, very serious times, is the point. And that when you are living in very, very serious times, you want serious politicians in charge. And at the margin, I think that will make a difference to a lot of elections. And I'm wondering whether you think it will impact on Ireland, because the Sinn Féin vote, which essentially is voting for a party that has promised to solve the housing and health crises in ways that might be subjected to analysis. It hasn't yet. And a promise to raise your taxes. After that, that's it. That's their platform, if you like, without any detail underneath it. And the dilettante vote, if you like, will go to Sinn Féin because it's fed up. We're fed up, us dilettantes, with the incumbents. And we want to give the insurgent party, shall we say, a go. The world environment is becoming very, very dangerous. Is that the sort of thing that the dilettante voter is going to do, do you think?
Yeah, that could play into it. On the one hand, you'd say that because geopolitics has gotten more fraught, more dangerous, we would need something bigger to happen come the election. We would need to be maybe in an environment where Russia has advanced further into Ukraine and with meaningful movements, maybe Taiwan lights up, some other issue that would come along and prompt Irish voters to consider that in their considerations. But the flip side I'd give is that the attitudes towards security, global affairs in Ireland could be quite, we can very much dismiss it a lot of the time. And base expectations that come a general election, even if things have lit up a little more in global affairs, that people still will look to housing, healthcare, and the main top issues to make their decision. Now, the bigger issue around which you've described as a kind of a flight to safety, a kind of a, you know, voter for who you know, who you trust, who the serious politicians are, I think that will come more into play when you talk about the issues that are going to be top of the list, like I said, the list of policies that parties will have. Sinn Féin are going to be under ultra high scrutiny. You go back to the last election, they weren't considered a major player to be number one in the vote. They came along and did that by the end. But the kind of general elections are a full month campaign, and you have a whole new cycle of scrutiny around the major parties. Sinn Féin are going to be number one for that scrutiny. Every line item in their proposed manifesto will be deliberated upon.
Podcast, I promise you.
Yes, yeah, that's it. Like, and if we're doing it, so will the main media as well. And Sinn Féin has done no great service to itself by launching so many lawsuits with the Irish media. The media will do their job diligently to treat Sinn Féin as being the prospective Taoiseach party, and they will get scrutinized for that. But you're going to have some media which add a little extra scrutiny because they can see that some of their colleagues have actually had lawsuits launched at them by Sinn Féin. So I think the scrutiny is going to be so high that lack of thorough detail that sometimes Sinn Féin bring might actually trip them up. So that midway during the election campaign, people might begin to say, actually, you know what? These guys aren't the kind of the prophecy that they say they are. And that might lead not just to some votes back to the main parties. I think the bigger thing is that we're going to have a more disparate mix within the opposition. So I mentioned parties like Aintu, the Independents, Sock Dems. I think the Sinn Féin vote is going to get diluted, essentially. I'm more confident of that dilution of Sinn Féin towards the opposition than I am towards votes back to the government. And the reason I say that is because grand coalitions, which this is between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, tend not to raise to get extra votes at the subsequent general election. We have good data on this. You look at Germany, Austria, Netherlands, other countries where there have been grand coalitions. You go in with a high number of seats to form that grand coalition, you tend to get a bit less seats come the next election.
Yeah, David, you you talk about Sinn Féin getting lots of scrutiny, which I totally agree with, because to date, I guess we have an understanding of what Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are all about to a point. But with a new Fine Gael leader, I would have thought that Simon Harris and Fine Gael's policy platform will now get a lot more scrutiny than if Leo had stuck around for another year, because it strikes me that, what is he, 2 weeks or just over a week into the job at this stage, most of what he said early on related to Palestine. And I was listening to a lot of what he was saying. I was thinking to myself, this isn't exactly something that will be a game changer in terms of voting intentions in this country. And I agree with you. I think it will come back to domestic policies. Health, law and order and housing are obviously, I think, the three biggest issues. But it always strikes me as a Fine Gael voter that Leo Varadkar, particularly over the last couple of years, spent a lot of his time and his policy direction in trying to attract people who are never going to vote for Fine Gael anyway, in any circumstances, and was sort of neglecting the more traditional Fine Gael voter, you know, slightly right of centre, economically slightly left of centre from a political perspective.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Yes, this is a major, major topic, and it's come up a lot. You know, whatever you see headline from Fine Gael TDs and government ministers, there is a bigger, I think, undercurrent amongst Fine Gael members that too much drift has happened. Although, actually, to be fair to some TDs, the likes of Michael Reagan, Charlie Flanagan, they have effectively said this, that Fine Gael have drifted too much leftward during their time, particularly in this coalition with the Greens and Fianna Fáil. The problem, of course, for Fine Gael, though, is that to make a play for the traditional centre-right, it's very hard to do that within the three-party coalition, because what effectively you're doing is, a year out from election, you're saying, okay, we're going to be more rightward, but then people will say back to you, oh, but you're in government, what are you going to do for the next year? So if there is to be a rightward lean, I think that it may not come until the general election, because then everyone will disregard this three-party coalition, and then Fine Gael can be a bit more itself, so to speak. And what you say about pitching to voters who, you know, are never going to vote for you, I think that's emphatically true. Some of the social agenda issues, you look at the two referendums that we have, which were emphatically defeated. There were many, many Fine Gael TDs, when you speak to them privately, who were not enthusiastic about this at all. There was a kind of a, and this is where being a government can be risky, because these things came from Citizens Assembly, then they went to government committees, then they ended up, and there was kind of a kind of a ball that was rolling there. And because these things have already started, some TDs just go along with them. But there needs to be a kind of a speaking up within the coalition here on some of these things. And when the election comes around, if Fine Gael does tack a little more rightward, will it actually be believed? Will people turn around and just say, well, yeah, but look, you guys were in for how many years, and, you know, we don't trust you to just pivot now, you know? So this is where there's a major, major challenge. And it's why I'm more confident on the opposition vote being diluted than I am about the government parties actually rising up during the next general election.
David, you haven't even mentioned the Labour Party written off.
Yeah, it's hard to see the route back for Labour. The Soc Dems come out pretty solidly higher than them in most opinion polls. I would rate I think Alan Kelly's time as Labour leader was a more successful time for them, certainly in airtime coverage and on issues that are, I think, where Labour can pick up support. So if I was advising Labour now, how could you pick up support? I would be disregarding some of the social issues that are out there. There's saturation in kind of all the left-wing parties want to talk about those. Ivana Bacic is very experienced in that. It's where her beginnings in politics were in student politics era. But Alan Kelly used to talk like a Fine Gaeler. He would talk about people who got up early in the morning. He would talk about the burden of the working world and taxation and all of that. And there was even talk, rumours, that he may himself actually jump ship to Fine Gael. I don't think that was ever well-founded. But Labour had a chance. They had a hope of revival under Alan Kelly. I just don't rate their chances of revival now. And that's such contrast to over in the UK, where the UK Labour Party are set to sweep into power with a possible supermajority. It's a very, very different world. But it shows that centre-left politics has a lot of potential. It just isn't being capitalised upon.
I guess Sinn Féin would these days describe themselves as centre-left, or would they just say left? Because they seem to be able to capture that zeitgeist, that thing that is present in the electorate, an appetite for left-wing policies. How come they're doing it and the Labour Party isn't?
Well, they label themselves as Republican Socialist. So, you know, that's very emphatically left. Their more recent attempt has been to snug their way into the centre left by toning down some of the more radical sides of their agenda. That has very much taken in a whole swathe of the Irish electorate. Like, when studies are done on to what extent Irish people lean more leftward or rightward, we are a country that actually leans a little more leftward. A lot of our debates around taxation, social welfare, we do tilt towards kind of helping the most vulnerable, and that's probably to our strength as well. It is somewhat ironic, though, that we are a country that has always been led by supposed centre-right parties, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, even though we in a lot of surveys actually tilt a little leftward in our outlook. It's partly because Fianna Fáil for many years were a kind of a shape-shifting party. They could bring into their coalition a lot of small businesses and industry, but also bring in working class people and be a kind of an umbrella for the working man too. And Sinn Féin, in a way, are trying to kind of grow into that space. They are very much the Fianna Fáil of our day. If you think about the Fianna Fáil of the 70s that got rid of commercial rates and very much gutted the budget by doing so, Sinn Féin are trying to play for that space. And it's no surprise that Fianna Fáil have spent more time in opinion polls in kind of the late teens, kind of behind Fine Gael and Sinn Féin. They're actually very much languishing vis-a-vis the other two parties. If you look at the average of opinion polls, somehow it hasn't post-crisis for Micheál Martin. But, you know, next election, let's see what happens.
One of the reasons why I think the Labour parties in the two islands are very different, of course, is history. And the UK has a long history, not so much recently, but going back to the formation of the Labour Party in the industrial working class. You've never had an industrial working class in Ireland. You've never had miners, steel workers, shipbuilders, car plants, supplying both union membership and the fees and the votes that tend to go with it. You've made
That's
this shift in Ireland from an agrarian economy to a high-tech economy without passing through the industrialization phase. And I think that accounts for a lot of the differences. But of course, so that means that the class system that you refer to in Ireland, specifically mentioning the working class, your working class is very different to the British working class. And I think that's underappreciated a lot.
That's very true, yeah. And nowadays, because Ireland has such a high rate of, you know, white-collar jobs, office jobs, it's all that more surprising that young people are tilting towards Sinn Féin. Because what you effectively have is a whole cohort of office workers working in a mix of multinational and other sectors who are voting for a Republican Socialist Party. Now, you can look at that two ways and say, okay, there's potential to bring those people back. But as long as the housing situation is as dire as it is, I don't see it changing. So I attended a report launch yesterday by the National Youth Council of Ireland. They did a fantastic survey by Ipsos BNA, where they sampled 700 young people. So opinion polls typically look at all adults. This zooms in at young people. So we can look at things like the mental health of young people. We can look at their financial situation. But there was a key section on life milestones. And I'm very interested in this in some of my economic research, because I'm 31 years old. I'm looking at a generation of mine who, are in the kind of white collar world, but are kind of Sinn Féin friendly and are aspiring to life milestones. They're aspiring to move out of the family's home, to get living independently, and then ultimately buy a home and maybe start a family. And what the survey did was they asked, at what age would you like to reach certain life milestones? But the key one where there was a big gap between desire and reality was housing. The desired age at which you would like to own your home is around 31. And the actual age that the census has revealed in 22, it's about 36. So the average young person is now waiting 5 years to attain the keys to their first home. Some of the other life milestones, like moving out and getting a job, they were as people expected and as people would desire. There isn't a great wait. It's not like we've large unemployment. There's various things that are working well for life milestones, but the thing of attaining house is just still the number one issue. And that's going to provide a whole generation of opposition voters at the next election instead of to the main government parties.
How much do you think that generation of younger Irish voters is aware of history, that those milestones that their parents and grandparents reached are largely a myth in terms of actual historical data, that the way in which Irish people got good jobs and good homes in those previous generations was frankly through immigration? And that the only way you got a good job and a home in Ireland back in Jim's short trousers days was either by joining the civil service or a bank, and that there frankly weren't any other good middle class jobs.
Yeah, so this kind of skews the historical data then, right? So if you look back to the 91 census, the average age first time buyer was 26, not 36. So you have a full decade that this milestone has worsened to later in life. But the generation in 91 who were getting homes were the people who had jobs and who weren't emigrating.
Their numbers were tiny.
Yes, exactly. Today. Yeah. So that because of a much larger workforce nowadays too. So there is a certain... it's hard to pick a point in Irish history where all of these major milestones were actually being achieved at the age at which people would like them. But it's very clear the one you got to address now, which is housing. I think young people are not aware of that, to be honest, of the history. And it is why people need to be aware come the general election of the trade-offs that are there. Is the if a party is saying that they will massively address the housing crisis, is that at the expense of another milestone? If by some promise to lower the age at which you can buy your first house, you may then end up through a period of unemployment, is that a fair trade-off to make? That'll be a key debate point, I think, come the election.
David, can I just ask you a little bit about your perception of the Irish economy? Over the last couple of podcasts, Chris and myself have been discussing the fact that the macro indicators here all look so positive, but yet, certainly my experience writ large over the last couple of weeks, I've been out and about talking to a lot of businesses, particularly in the SME sector, and I'm getting a very, very negative feedback from many businesses who are finding life extremely challenging. And Chris is wont to say, we've never had it so good. Do you think that's the case?
Well, I think your perception is right, that we probably are teetering on the potential to end up with rounds of job losses, because when SMEs are saying that to you, that tends to be the thing that comes next, is that you can have a period of full employment, but then it turns. If we look at some of the macro background stuff, so things like M3, the money supply growth, banking system lending, these metrics across Europe were pretty buoyant coming out of COVID, but they've begun to slow. And this is kind of the long tail of the higher interest rates that the ECB has now begun to set. It's partly by design. If you want to get inflation down, you also need to slow the economy in a way. The ECB so far has been able to engineer kind of a soft landing, we actually haven't entered a recession with a way to get inflation down. We've had growth still continuing, and we're getting inflation down. It's perfect kind of Goldilocks scenario. Not too hot, not too cold. Will we see these significant rounds of job losses? I'm doubtful. I think we're in a world now where post-COVID, governments just do not want to see any unemployment whatsoever. Our sensitivity towards allowing any sort of unemployment just isn't there. And I think if SMEs are struggling, which I expect they are, that I don't think we'll actually reach that point of significant job losses. I think governments are just going to come in, keep supporting the system, whether it be through lending, be it through tax breaks. I think the whole full employment agenda is just going to continue. That's why I'm very bullish on Biden, because I think that the bigger, the wider US economy is going to provide this as well. It could still be at unemployment, inflation continuing to be lower than it was in years gone by. That's going to provide some kind of electoral tailwind to him. I'd certainly be, I would make a bet by March next year that we will still be at buoyant levels of employment in the Irish economy, purely for political reasons, that governments just don't want to see any sort of unemployment because of how sensitive it is. You know, remember what we did during COVID? Nobody loses their jobs. We're going to furlough everyone. We're going to make sure everyone stays in their jobs. That mentality, that infrastructure is still there because we did it, because government departments were involved in it. Take, for example, looking at the structure of business costs, right? You know, what your revenues are, what your costs are. Government departments got fluent in that stuff during COVID because everyone was trying to figure out, okay, what parts of the business have we shut down? What part of their business costs do we jump in and support? Do we give tax breaks on, etc.? And, you know, every government department involved in this has all of these files, that all of these kind of workings out in front of them. I think come any sort of unemployment or slowdown in the economy, everyone's going to dust off those Excel spreadsheets, look at the lines of business that are faltering and try and prop up and support them.
David, your prediction then for the election is in UK language, a hung parliament.
Yes.
Probably yeah. Nobody over 30%.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
A long period of negotiation over the formation of a grand coalition. Is that the bottom line?
I think so. And if any major crisis does come up, like some dip in unemployment, I think the government departments, which, you know, won't be... There'll still be ministers in office. That's the other thing as well, is that even though you don't have a majority, you may not have a majority in the Dáil for things, if ministers are still in office, they can say various things. And I think we will have a long period, but I think we'll get through it. And I don't think there'll be significant, nothing that we can't overcome.
Excellent, David. Listen, thank you very much for a wide-ranging discussion on Irish economics and Irish politics. And personally, I'd like to thank you for your excellent contribution and also wish you the best of luck with Dáil on the next round of your podcast.
Thank you.
Add my thanks and best wishes for the podcast as well. So thanks, David. And will you come back, please?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you guys are welcome on ours. Let's do this in many different venues and talk about everything.
Yeah. Thanks very much.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, David.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.